You're holding on Nun Tess Amr Aleph, four lines from the bottom. We left off yesterday like this. We started with a discussion saying that if the Mizbeach was damaged, then any korbanos that were shechted during the period when it was damaged, or we discussed, does it mean when they were shechted before or after, whatever the case is, that temporarily the Mizbeach is disqualified because it's damaged, and that it can't function as a Mizbeach, therefore the korbanos are possible. We discussed in that connection a statement, on the other hand, the Mizbeach HaPnimi, if it was removed from its place, you're still able to offer ketores on the spot, on the floor where it's supposed to be. And by the way, a couple of the Mefarshim bring a point, maybe that may be one reason why the Mizbeach HaZahav is mentioned separately from all the other Kalim. Most of the Kalim of the Beit Hamikdash, of the Mishkan rather, are described in Parshas Terumah. You have the Aron and the Shulchan and the Menorah and so forth, but then all of a sudden you have the Mizbeach HaZahav is mentioned only at the end of Parshas Tisabeh, after you have many other things in between. That's the hint of this idea that the Mizbeach HaZahav, unlike the other things, is not necessarily essential for korbanos to be offered. Because you're not korbanos rather, but ketores, whatever, because you can offer ketores even if the Mizbeach HaZahav is missing from its spot.
So ketores?
That's what I said. I meant ketores. But that's the point, though, is the Mizbeach HaZahav, the main thing that's done with it is ketores. Once a year, you have, okay, the blood from the korbanos of Yom Kippur sprinkled on it. Fine. We said that for that, you do need an actual Mizbeach. And the same thing with the outer Mizbeach. Fine. But in general, yeah. Okay.
The rest of the year.
In principle, you could just do, yeah, the rest of the year, only ketores is brought out. And in principle, you could do that on the floor. Okay, but we did say that Rav Yehuda would agree, though, that nevertheless, you can't, even though Rav Yehuda is going to say in the next piece of Gemara that we're going to have now, that the floor of the Azara has the Kedusha of the Mizbeach to a certain extent, nevertheless, Rav Yehuda will agree that you can't sprinkle blood of Korbanos on it. To sprinkle blood of Korbanos, there has to be an actual built Mizbeach. So therefore,
you can't
do that on the floor. So therefore, in other words, there is a difference. The Mizbeach HaZahav doesn't have to be there as far as Ketores, but it does have to be there as far as sprinkling blood. The same thing goes with the outer Mizbeach. You could have that things that are going to be burnt on the Mizbeach can be burnt on the floor instead, as we're going to discuss, according to Rabbi Yehuda. But to sprinkle blood, you need to do that on the Mizbeach, and that's what Rav is saying, therefore, that if you were to shecht korbanos at that point, when the Mizbeach is damaged, or even maybe if you have korbanos already shechted, and then you want to sprinkle the blood or whatever, you can't do that because you need a functional Mizbeach for that. And one of the things that the Mizbeach needs, in order to be functional, then it has to be whole.
Sprinkling blood
can only be done on when the Mizbeach is whole, right? So four lines from the bottom. My Rabbi Yehuda. Where do we see this opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that he says that the floor has the kedusha of the Mizbeach? Like this, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Now, you have a pasuk in Melachim, when it describes Shlomo HaMelech's dedication of the first Beit Hamikdash. We lay the end of it, which includes this pasuk as Haftara of Shmini Aseret. So we say like this. Vayomahu kiddush hamelach tercha esther shafat. So really it's supposed to be. On that day, the king made holy the inside, meaning the floor space of the chaser. Because the pasuk continues, ki mizbeach sha'asamosh, ki mizbeach hanachoshet asher l'tnei Hashem. Because the copper mizbeach, which was before Hashem, meaning in front of the Beit Hamikdash, katan was too small mehachil. It was too small to be able to fit all the korbanos. The prophet mentions over there that they brought on that day, by the Chanukah Tabayis, they brought 142,000 korbanos. 22,000 cattle, 120,000 sheep. Yeah. So therefore, Dvarim Kiksavim, David Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says that's exactly what it means. It means that the Mizbeach that was there was too small. Now, the Mizbeach that was built, now, we're going to say soon, that the word Mizbeach, now, the word Mizbeach on the Choshet, you have to consider, the one that Shlomo HaMelech built on the face of it is made out of stone, like the Mizbeach is supposed to be, Mizbeach HaBonim Tassali. So it's not made with copper. So okay, you have some of the Mefarshim explain that maybe he plated it with copper, like the original Mizbeach and the Mishkan we have in this week's parasha, right? But they took the fire pans from Kodak's group and made them into a covering for the Mizbeach. So maybe by the same logic, maybe they also plated the stone Mizbeach with copper. Most of the other Mephoshim understand, and that seems to be the implication of the Gemara later, that Min Bachana Choshes over here, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda, doesn't mean the actual Mizbeach HaNechoshes. It means the stone Mizbeach that was built to replace the Mizbeach HaNechoshes. So in other words, the original wooden one that was made in Moshe Rabbeinu's times and plated with copper, now though, it was replaced, like all the other, by a large one. Because it had to be portable, right? They couldn't carry it around. Mizbech HaBonim means that eventually there's going to be a Mizbech HaBonim. But at the time, it was Mizbech HaDomah, possibly, that every time they filled up the inside of it with a mound of earth. But no, the apostle describes, in fact, it's true. It was made out of wood and plated with gold. In the permanent Beis HaMikdash, they had a stone Mizbech. In Chassidus, by the way, it talks about the idea, the deeper idea behind it, that the Mishkan had to be built out of Semeach and Chai, the two higher levels of, the two middle levels, whatever, of existence, the vegetable and the animus. Therefore, parts of it were made out of animal skins, parts of it were made out of wood. You had some inanimate, you had gold and silver and copper in there, but mainly it was made out of organic substances. As opposed to the permanent Beis HaMikdash, which was mostly built out of stone, because that to represent the idea that it's like a higher degree of revelation of Elokus, which can even encompass and even elevate the inanimate, the dunya. Okay, anyway. So the point is, Rabbi Yehuda understands when the pasuk says that the mizbeach was too small, it means exactly what it sounds like. They had a mizbeach that was they built a mizbeach, which in the first Beis HaMikdash, the base of the mizbeach was 28 by 28 amas. The top surface of it, the top level of it was 24 by 24, the Makom HaMa'arecha in it, once you subtract the space for the Kronos and the space for the Kohanim's walkway that we discussed yesterday, then you have 20 by 20 for the Makom HaMa'arecha, 400 square.
28
minus? Yeah, you start like this, you start with 28, then you subtract one on each side for the Yisod, so you have 26.
On each side.
On each side, right, so you have on one side it sticks out fully, on the other side it sticks out an arm or whatever. So you have 26, then you go up to the Sogev, you indent another Amma on the side, so now you got 24, you go up to the top, you reach the top surface over there, now you have to subtract. On each corner you have a Keren, which is an Amma by an Amma, so subtract a strip that includes those around the edge of the Mizbeach, subtract another strip, an Amma wide for the Kohanim's walkway, so that they can walk around without bumping into the Kronos. And then you're left with, with 20 by 20 Amma, that was the Makom HaMa'arecha. We'll learn later on, we'll learn that in the second Beis HaMikdash it was larger. They added four amos on each of two sides to make it 32 at the bottom and 28 at the top. We'll get to that later. Anyway. Yeah, we'll see. We'll get into that. But yeah. Anyway, the point is that so Rabbi Yehuda understands like this. So they built this Mizbeach where the Makom HaMa'arecha, the place which is available for burning korbanos, is 20 by 20, and still it wasn't big enough for all the tremendous number of korbanos. Therefore, Shlomo HaMelech on the spot there had to decide that the floor should also have the kedusha of the Mizbeach so that they can burn korbanos over there as well. It wasn't not a unilateral decision. We mean he did it in his capacity as the head of the base in whatever. The point is they made a takana that such a thing should be allowed. Give it Rabbi Yehuda. That's how Rabbi Yehuda learns it. Amalei Rabbi Yosi, because Rabbi Yosi says that can't be what it means. Ba'alot van Nehmar, don't you have a pasuk earlier in Malachim, before the Beis HaMikdash was built, that describes how Shlomo went to Givon, where Givon at the time is where the Mishkan was located. So they had at that point the Oren was in it's north of Yerushalayim. Yeah, I'm not sure in modern terms exactly where it is, but whatever. Anyway, yeah, some town north or northwest, whatever, of Yerushalayim. Anyways, at that time, the Mishkan was over there. The Aron itself was in Yerushalayim. David had set up a special place for it in Yerushalayim. The rest of the Mishkan was located in Givon, including the Mizbeach that Moshe had made, or that Saul had made under Moshe's direction, whatever. And, what do you mean, how?
Moshe constructed
the Saul? Yeah, the same. No. Before he passed away, when Moshe first got the instructions from Hashem, after he came down from Har Sinai, then he told the Tzal, well, they told the Tzal and all the others, or the in the Midbar, and the entire parts of the Yaakov. So what happens? So the Pasuk says, Elof Oilus Yala Shlomo Al Mizbeach Ahu. The Pasuk says that Shlomo brought 1,000 korbanos on that Mizbeach. Now, let's consider, how large was the Mizbeach that was made under Moshe's direction? The Pasuk says it was 5 by 5 amos. Again, You have to subtract 5 by 5 means the top surface of it. The one that was made in the mid-road didn't have any stowage, and as far as the stowage of it, had a ledge that stuck out top and bottom instead of one that indented in. So fine, the top surface of it is 5 by 5. Again, subtract an amma on each side for the chronos, and an amma on each side for the konim's walkway. What's the space available for the makom ha'arafa? 1 by 1 amma. And they were able to bring 1,000 korbanos on it. How can you even possibly burn 1,000 korbanos on 1 amma by 1 amma? Rashi says, because there was a fire there, in Hashemayim that burnt the korbanos faster than normal.
What can you put on 1 amma by 1 amma?
You put the pieces one at a time. You brought an oila, they cut up the pieces and put it on that space, and the fire in Hashemayim burnt them very quickly, and the same thing with the next one, and so forth, yes. The point is, Rabbi Yossi says, the ilu b'vayse lomim. It was 1,000, but in given. Okay. So you have 1,000 korbanos over there. The ilu b'vayse lomim hoim. Now what about, let's compare with what happened when the Beis HaMikdash was built. How big was the mizbeach over there, and how many korbanos were brought on there? So you have again the process by the dedication, by Yizbach Shlomo as Zevach HaShlomim Asher Zevach LaHashem. Shlomo sacrificed all the Shlomim, which he had offered to Hashem. They were Boker Esrim Shnayim Aleph, 22,000 cattle and 120,000 sheep. Now, Rabbi Yossi says, Achshata Magiyelach, Teshpin Olus, Lominian Amos, if you consider the number of korbanos, the number of korbanos versus the number of amos versus the number of square amos, Zeg Gadol Mizeh, you actually come out that the proportionately the one in Givon was larger than the one in the Beis Mikdash. Because let's consider, in Givon you had 1,000 korbanos on one square amos. Here you had 120,000, 142,000 korbanos, but you have 400 square amos to work with, 20 by 20. Proportionally, it comes out they have to bring more in Givon than there were in Beit Elamim. So what are you telling me the Mizbeach and Beit Elamim were too small? That they should have to be Mekadosh the floor. Ella, so no, so Rabbi Yossi says, no, so then you have to understand the Pasuk as follows. Mao Koten Mehal. So what does the Pasuk mean when it says that the Mizbach HaNechoshet was too small to be able to fit all the Korbanos? It means, we're not talking about the Mizbeach that was used to replace the Mizbach HaNechoshet. What we mean is the Mizbach HaNechoshet itself. You have to ask the question, in other words, Rabbi Yossi is saying, why would they have replaced the Mizbach HaNechoshet? If it was still usable, so the one from Moshe Rabbeinu's time, why would they set it aside, the one that was made under Moshe Rabbeinu's direction, why would they set it aside and build a permanent one? It must be because the one from Moshe's time would be too small anymore. Therefore, ka'adim ha'oim la'chaber is plainly nanasu, so it's like the expression a person might... No, one second. Rabbi Yossi is saying like this. For 1,000 korbanos, fine, you can manage. For 142,000 korbanos, you wouldn't be able to manage. For that one square amma.
Okay.
Yeah, because it was all done in one day. And they had the 42,000 korbanos. Yeah. By Yizbach Shlomo, Yizbach Shlomo, Zevach Shlomo. Yeah. But that's what it is. No, so on the, why not? I mean, you have a Gemara in Pesachim, for example, that mentions that one year, the korbanos, that one year they had 1.2 million korbanos Pesach, and they were all brought in one afternoon, a very Pesach. Yeah. And they're the koyanim, whereas when they have enough koyanim, and then they're quick at their job, koyanim do the main, then yeah, they can dispatch it very quickly. Yeah. Again, that's Rashi's point, though, also, is there's an Eishim and Hashemayim that burnt things unusually fast, otherwise, yeah, it would take forever, but yeah. Anyway, the point is, so, Ela Mao Kotim Mehal. So what do you mean by using the expression that the Mizbeach was too small? The point is, it's referring to the Mizbeach that was built under Moshe's direction. Meaning that the pasuk is using an expression like a person might say about somebody else who is possible for the avodah. He might use the expression "plony nanasu." Plony is a midget, implying we're possible for avodah, implying and therefore he's possible for the avodah. In other words, using the expression "katan mehachil" means that we're saying, why are we setting aside Moshe Rabbeinu's mizbeach and declaring it possible? I'm not using it anymore, and instead we're going to use this big stone mizbeach that was built under Shlomo's direction because. But that's what we're going to do. From now on, we're going to passel Moshe's Mizbeach and use only the big stone Mizbeach that was built. But in other words, as the Gemara is going to say later, according to Rabbi Yossi, when the Pasuk says that Shlomo was Mekadosh the Chaser, doesn't mean he was Mekadosh the floor space that we heard it say. It means he was Mekadosh the Chaser that now it has the Kedusha of the Azara and it can contain the Mizbeach. But not that according to Rabbi Yossi, you actually had to be Makruv Korbanos on the Mizbeach itself. Not like Rabbi Yehuda would say you can be Makruv them on the floor.
So he was mustering, putting to Rabbi.
So according to Rabbi Yossi, all the 142,000 korbanos were offered on that one large mizbeach. They set aside the copper coated mizbeach from Moshe's time. They put it away in storage. Instead, they used only the stone mizbeach, whose matam amaracha is 20 by 20 amos, 400 square amos, and according to Rabbi Yossi, that was enough. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, it wasn't enough, and therefore they had to be makriv on the floor as well, and therefore on the spot over there, Shlomo and his Beis Din had to decide that the floor has kedusha as well. Yeah. So the point is, therefore, so we see that Rabbi Yehuda holds that you can be makriv on the floor. So that's what we were saying before. Rabbi Yehuda says you can be makriv on the floor. However, he also says when it comes to sprinkling blood, that you have to do on the actual mizbeach. But the burning of korbanos, that you can do on the floor. Fine. So the question is, now let's analyze this machlokas. Rabbi Yehuda shat with Tom Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yehuda, what is he doing? Rabbi Yossi has a very good point. Fortunately, the big mizbeach is much larger than the one from Givon when you consider the number of korbanos. So why shouldn't have been enough? Why shouldn't it have been enough?
Proportionately,
if you can do 1,000 korbanos in one square amma of the old mizbeach, then it follows that in 400 square amas, you could do 400,000 korbanos.
Right.
And they only had 142,000. So it should have been plenty. Rabbi Yossi has a good point. Why should they need the floor space if the top surface of the mizbeach should be enough? So what does Rabbi Yehuda answer? The answer is Yehuda Latane. Rabbi Yehuda goes according to his own svara.
When they were separated in two kingdoms, Israel and Judah, when Israel offered the...
They had their glass off. That was the whole point. Yerubim did not want people going to Yerushalayim for this mikdash because he's concerned that then they're going to rejoin Malchus Beis David, especially they're going to see Rechavam sitting in the Azar or whatever. But, and therefore he set up guards to prevent people from going to Yerushalayim, and he set up his Egle HaZahav and Beis El and Dun. And from then on, he told the people, you have to go, you want to bring korbanos, you bring them to these places. And from then on, so unless you had the faithful people who came to Yerushalayim, either they sneaked through the lines or they just told you, no, he didn't. They had guards. You have actually a pasuk in Hosea which says just that they were killing people who were. But yeah, you had people who managed to sneak through the lines. You had other people who, as I told you the other day, you had people who abandoned that kingdom at all, and they moved south to Yehuda to live where they could freely go to the business. That's right. But for the rest of the people, no, they were satisfied with going to Beis El and Dun. And yeah, that's how it ran for the next.
Why didn't allow people to go to Yehuda and come back?
Because the whole point was he didn't want people going to Yerushalayim, and then they're going to be attracted to Rechavam and his kingdom. And he figured that he wants to establish his kingdom. He wants the people should be loyal to him and not like this. They seceded from Rechavam, and like this, he's concerned that they're going to go back.
It was Rechavam.
Rechavam was the son of Shlomo, the king of Yehuda.
And the king of Israel?
Yerubim. You know what? Yeah. You know what? We'll learn Tanakh another time. But I'll if you want, I'll tell you the story another time. But right now, let's move. If we have time at the end today, then I'll
tell you.
Not directly. Not directly. Not directly. But okay. Rabbi Yehuda was
tight.
Yeah. So there should have been room, 400,000. So why according to Rabbi Yehuda? They need the floor. The answer is Rabbi Yehuda was tight. Rabbi Yehuda goes according to his own Sevara. He learns that no, actually the Mizbeach that Moshe built was actually larger than one Amma is the Makam Amaracha, according to the way. Rabbi Yehuda understands, the Mizbeach itself was 5x5. But Rabbi Yehuda understands that the Mizbeach was actually larger than 5x5. Rabbi Yehuda, well, in other words, right, as we're going to see, Rabbi Yehuda is going to understand, we're going to see how Rabbi Yehuda understands this, that the Mizbeach that was made in Moshe's times was actually 10 by 10 amos. It's not big, but on the other hand, let's consider proportionally. In that case, 10 by 10, again, working down in the same way, taking off space for the kronos and for the walkway for the kohanim, leaves 6 by 6 for the Makam HaMarach. That's 36 square amos. 36 plane. 36 plane, and in that you can bring 1,000 korbanos, right? As compared to, in the whole 36 square amos, you had room for 1,000 korbanos.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now translate that to the mizbeach, to the permanent mizbeach and the Beis Hamikdash, 400 square amos. So you're talking a factor of about 11 times as much. But you had much more than 11 times as many korbanos, because instead of 1,000, you had 142,000. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda, going according to his own svara, is correct in saying that the big mizbeach was not big enough for all this tremendous number of korbanos, and therefore they needed the floor. And where do we see Rabbi Yehuda say that? At D'tanya, as we learn, and by the way, Meshech Chachma points out, the same way as we were saying yesterday, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, mizbeach and the permanent Beit Mikdash was directly centered in front of the Heichal. And in fact, the ribs of it exactly paralleled the ribs of the Heichal plus the walls on either side of it. So it was also in the Mishkan, because the Mishkan, the inner dimensions of it were 10 by 3. The outer dimensions were, the krushim were an amma thick, so the outer dimensions of it are 12. Here, Rabbi Yehuda is saying the Mizbeach is 10 wide. Then you have the bottom, the poles sticking out of it for the people to carry it. So that makes 12 altogether. So again, it comes out that it was exactly centered in front of the Mishkan and exactly parallel to it and width. Okay. Anyway.
So,
but the point is, we see from this next braisa that we're going to learn, that Rabbi Yehuda held that that's how it is. The Mizbeach in Mishkan was 10 by 10 amas, not 5 by 5. So in that case, the Makom HaMa'arachav, it comes out to be much bigger. And in that case, proportionally, Taka, the one in the Beit Mikdash wasn't large enough for when you have
10 by 10.
If it's 10 by 10, then the Makom HaMa'arachav is 6 by 6. 6 by 6 is 36 square amas, not one square amma like Rabbi Yehuda would have.
36, you would...
In 36, if you can do 1,000 karbanos, so that if you can do 1,000 karbanos on 36 square amas, so fine, whatever does it come out for amma, it comes out 1,000 divided by 36, so okay, it comes out 28 or so karbanos per square amma. Fine, but then if you have 400 square amas in the permanent Beit Mikdash, that gives you room for only that gives you room for only about 11,000 korbanos, not 142,000. Yeah. Okay. So the Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says by the Mishkan that the Mizbeach was chomish amos orech v'chomish amos rechav, the Pasuk says that it was 5 long and 5 wide. Dvarim kikstavon divrei Rabbi Yosi. So Rabbi Yosi says that's exactly what it means. It was 5 by 5. Therefore, the Makom HaMa'arachah comes out to be 1 by 1. Rabbi Yehuda says no. Nema kan ravua, because he says, I have a zera shava. Here the Pasuk says that the Mizbeach was square. Now it doesn't have to say that it was square, because if it says it's 5 by 5, that means it's square. But nema lahalan ravua, now you have a Pasuk in Yechezkel that describes the Mizbeach that's going to be in the third base in the Shibon and the Meir of Yemenu, which also describes that Mizbeach as square. And Malahalam names to Isra HaYamoyed, and the measurements that Yechezkel was giving for the Mizbeach are not the total length and width. That Yechezkel is measuring from the middle of the Mizbeach in each direction. We're going to bring a pasuk in a minute that where Yechezkel says, that where Yechezkel gives the dimensions of the Mizbeach, but he's not counting, he mentions that the top of the Mizbeach is 12 by 12. He doesn't mean 12 by 12. He means from the middle you measure 12 in this direction, 12 in this direction, 12, 12. So it comes out 24 by 24.
Not 12 in diagonal.
Not 12 in diagonal, no. 24 in radius, if you want to call it that. So from
radius.
Well, whatever. From the midpoint, from the center point to each of the four edges. Yeah. So therefore, Malahalamim to Issa Hoyamoda. So just like in Yechezkel's description, the dimensions are given counting from the center point and going in each direction. Akanim to Issa Hoyamoda. The same thing says Rabbi Yehuda on the basis of the word Ravua. That's not really a Zera Shava per se, because you can't make a Zera Shava between Chumash and Nevi'im, but it's a Gilui Milta Ba'alma. It's clarifying what does the word Ravua mean in these kinds of descriptions, and he's measuring from the middle. So therefore, he says the same thing about the Mizbeach and the Mishkan. Therefore, it means, so therefore, if it says five length and 5 grid, it's going in the same thing, measuring from the center point, 5 length and 5 grid in each direction. So it comes out 10 by 10. Yeah. And where do we see that that's the case by Yechezkel's Mizbeach? Because the Pasuk says, the Ariel, which is Yechezkel's term for the Mizbeach, or for the top of the Mizbeach, whatever, Shtem Esre Amal Lachol Ruach, it's 12 Amos in each direction, the actual Lashon HaPasuk, Shetim HaKubetus, is Shtem Esre Erdach, Shtem Esre Erdach, 12 length by 12 width, Ravua El Abbas Ravav, squared off to the four, to the four sides. So, the Braith says, Oy Eina El Yud Beis Al Yud Beis. Maybe, how do you know it means 24 by 24? Maybe it means exactly what it sounds like, 12 by 12. No. True Oyman, El Abbas Rabbah. No, because since the Pasuk continues, to its four quarters, to its four sides, Malamed Shema Emsehu Moida. That teaches us that you're not just talking about a square 12 by 12. Again, you're talking about from the center point, you're measuring 12 in each direction. So a total of 24 by 24.
after the mitzvah, third Beis Hamikdash mitzvah is smaller than the second one.
It wasn't. The second one, the second Beis Hamikdash was also the top of it, the 24 by 24. I was telling you the other day that...
The third will be 10 by 10?
No. In the first Beis Hamikdash, we said the Yisoid of the Mizbeach is 28 by 28, or whatever, 27, depending where you measure it exactly, because of the protrusions over there, but whatever. The point is, the footprint of it was 28 by 28. Subtract the Yisoid, subtract the Sozer, subtract the Kronis, subtract the Hiluch, the Mokum Hiluch Ragla Akarinim, and you have left 20 by 20 for the Mokum Amar Racha, for the place where they could arrange board and burn the Korban. The one in the Mishkan, 10 by 10, according to the Yehuda. Okay, the one in the first Beis Hamikdash, again, the top of it, so again. So far what we have is follows. In the Mishkan, according to the Yehuda, the one in the Mishkan was 5 by 5, and its Makom HaMaracha was 1 by 1. According to the Yehuda, the one in the Mishkan was 10 by 10, its Makom HaMaracha is 6 by 6. The one in the first Beis Hamikdash, everybody agrees, was 28 at the base, and 20 at the Makom HaMaracha. The one in the second Beis Hamikdash, and so it will also be in the third Beis Hamikdash, is 32 at the bottom, 24 at the top. When Yechezkel says 24, he's not counting the total top surface in the dam. He's talking about the Makom HaMaracha. He's talking about the space available to put wood and burn karbonas is 24 by 24.
Yeah, 24.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Kronos is also part of the Mizbeach. The Makom HaMaracha Rag La'Kayinim is also part of the Mizbeach. The area in which you can burn karbonas is 24 by 24, right?
And in the second?
It was the same thing.
And then the first?
In the first, it was 20 by 20.
No, the third one should be bigger than the second and the first.
No, because the second one, actually, I told you the other day. The second Beis Hamikdash was built mostly according to the same plan as the first one. However, what it is Yechezkel gave his description of the Beis Hamikdash between the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash and the building of the second one. It's 14 years after the Korban when he gives his description. The idea was supposed to be that if the Jewish people had been Zohar, then they would have come back from Golus Babel, and they would have built the final Beis Hamikdash. It would have been the second one. It would have been the final one, and they would have built it exactly according to Yechezkel's blueprint. Because it wasn't like that, therefore Yechezkel's blueprint there are details of it that are not clear to us what he means. There are details of it that weren't clear to them also. Therefore, what the Nevi'im of that time told them to do is build it mostly the same way as the first Beis Hamikdash, but incorporate certain details of what Yechezkel was mentioning regarding the third Beis Hamikdash. There will yet eventually be a third Beis Hamikdash, because this one's not it, but incorporate into this one some of the details of Yechezkel. And one of the details is the construction of the Mizbeach. Meaning the size of it, right. Actually, there is actually a difference, because Yechezkel describes the Mizbeach in the Mizbeach that he describes, the top of the Yesod is 2 amos off the ground. In the first and second Mizbeach, it was only 1 amos off the ground. So even that, they didn't build the Mizbeach exactly like Yechezkel's blueprint, but at least as far as the dimension, as far as most of the dimensions of it, they did. Okay, anyway.
Because this doesn't give any description of the Mizbeach?
Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, I have no idea, but... even if he does, I don't think he gives a description of it in terms of number of amas. He was really writing mostly for a Goyish audience that wouldn't care about such degree of detail, but I don't know. I haven't looked to see. Alright. Okay, so anyway, so the point is, Rabbi Hurda says that since I have a Zera Shavra from the word, or not really Zera Shavra, Zili Milsa, but Alma, whatever, from the word Rabua, therefore that teaches me that the Mizbeach and the Mishkan was four times the size, twice as long and twice as wide as UWCO are saying that it is based on the shot of the puzzle. So not 5 by 5, but 10 by 10. And therefore the Makom HaMaracha again comes out to be much bigger, 36 instead of 1. There UWCO, okay, what does UWCO answer to that? Rabbi Yossi would say, I agree there's a Gzeira Shava, he gomer, Gzeira Shava, but Goyvo who de gomer. But he says, I hold that the Gzeira Shava actually teaches us about the height of the Mizbeach rather than the width of it. Namely like this, because we have yet another Braita, the Tanya of a Sholosh Amos Kemos. So a Braita says, now this is talking again about Mizbeach and the Mishkan. The Pasuk says, after it says that it was 5 by 5, which again, Rabbi Yehuda is understanding that to mean measuring from the middle, so it actually comes out 10 by 10. But then the pasuk continues, v'sholosh amos kimoso, it was 3 amos tall. But now we also have a machlokes between these two. Divorim k'savan, divorim Rabbi Yehuda. Again, Rabbi Yehuda says, that means exactly what it sounds like. That it means, therefore, the Mizbeach is literally 3 amos tall. So according to him, it was much wider than we usually picture it. It was 10 by 10 instead of 5 by 5, but it was also very low, only 3 amos tall. Which is, where according to Rabbi Avraham Chaim, that's less than 5 feet. According to the Chazanish, 6 feet.
And in the first
and second Beis Hamikdash, and also in the third Beis Hamikdash, 10 amos tall. that of the existence. Yeah. Okay. Zivir Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Omer Rabbi Yossi said, no, it wasn't only three amas tall, because Nemakan Ravua v'Nemalahalan Ravua, again, I make a Gzeira Shava between the two words Ravua, but I'm using the other end of the Gzeira Shava is the word Ravua, not the one from Yechezkel that you, Rabbi Yehuda, are using, but rather the word Ravua that it says in connection with the Inu Mizbeach, and therefore Malahalan Gove Pishnayim Korok, right? Now, with the Inu Mizbeach, with the Mizbeach HaZahav, the height is twice the length or the width. Because there the Pasuk explicitly says that the Mizbeach HaZahav is one by one amma and two ammas tall.
So
the height is double the length, or double the width. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, Afkan Govei Pishnayim, Afkan Pishnayim Ka'okha. The same thing over here. The Gzeira Shava teaches us that the outer Mizbeach was the height was twice the width. Since Rabbi Yossi understands that the width was actually 5 by 5, that the length and width were actually 5, not 10, like Rabbi Yehuda says. He says the Gzeira Shava teaches us that the height was 10, the same as in the first Beis Hamikdash and the same as in the second Beis Hamikdash.
But shouldn't be the size be, if you do the Gzeira Shava, the size should be the same.
That's what we're going to see later, why each of them uses Gzeira Shava for only one detail. But we'll get to that. But Tosfos actually asked, what Tosfos asked comes later. But anyway. Okay, but yeah, so far what we have is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Mizbeach and the Mishkan was 10 by 10, 10 long, 10 wide, and 3 tall.
Right.
And according to Rabbi Yossi, it was 5 long, 5 wide, and 10 tall.
And
10 tall. So each of them is using the word Ravua for Gzeira Shava, but Rabbi Yehuda is using it to teach us about the length and width of the Mizbeach, that it wasn't 5 by 5, but rather 10 by 10, but he takes the 3 amas height at face value. Whereas Rabbi Yossi does the other way around. He says that the 5 by 5 is at face value. It means exactly that. And the Gzeira Shava teaches us that the Mizbeach is not 3 amas tall, but rather 10 amas tall. Because according to him, what it is the 3 amas refers to not the total height of the Mizbeach, but the height from the soviv until the top. Again, you have to have on every Mizbeach there's a soviv, but you have to have certain blood, like a bakasa, is applied on the upper half of the Mizbeach. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, maybe fine. You don't need to sew it on the one in the Mishkan, because it's only 3 amas tall. You could reach the top of it from the floor. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's 10 amas tall. You need a sew it, and therefore he understands. So therefore, from the top edge of the sew it until the top edge of the Mizbeach was 3 amas, and that's what he says. That's what the 3 amas means.
So the total height.
The total height is 10.
It's 10.
Yeah.
So it's 7 below.
So you have the sew it itself is an amas tall, but yeah, so you have 6 amas till the bottom of the soviv, then you have one to the soviv itself, yeah. Actually, the way the Pasuk describes it is the Mizbeach HaKitzen in the Mishkan, it's described, we mentioned the other day, there was a copper netting around it where the edge of the netting marked off the midpoint between the top and the bottom half of the Mizbeach. So therefore, what it would be is, in other words, you had like this, 5 amas of just bare walls in the Mizbeach. Then you had an amma of this netting, so the bottom edge of that netting was the marker, that marks off the top and the bottom half. So that netting takes up the 6th amma of the height. The 7th amma of the height is taken up by the soviv, and then the 8th, 9th, and 10th are the rest of the height of the mizbeach.
It's going to be 613.
I suppose, yeah, I don't know. Okay.
Yeah?
I guess so. All right. Fine. Yeah, okay. All right. Fine. Yeah, I guess so. Okay. All right. Amar Leir Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says, how can you say that the mizbeach that the Mizbeach HaKitzen was 10 amas tall, v'alei kvar nemar v'esachot me'a amah v'koyim chomish amas tzogomer. Actually, the actual expression of the pasuk is oda hachot me'a ba'amah, that the chotah was 100 amas long and 50 amas wide, v'koyim chomish amas. So the point is, the height of the koyim, the curtain that made up the height of the chotah in the Mishkan was 5 amas. So if you're telling me that the Mizbeach was 10 amas tall, what does that mean? It sticks up above the Kloyim. Etcha Koyin Omid Agami Mizbeach Ba'avoy to be Yodoy. How is it possible the Kloyim is going to be standing there on top of a 10 amas tall Mizbeach, like you're saying, holding something to do the Avoyda, a piece of a korban or whatever, and everybody sees him from the outside, it's not theistic. The Avoyda should, I mean, fine, they can see the Avoyda, but it shouldn't be yet. So we're talking about the Mishkan. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says it's impossible to say that the Mizbeach was 10 amas tall, because then it's all exposed to public view. It's not right.
Everybody was looking.
I know, it's one thing a person wants to come into the chassid and look, by all means, but just that a person should be able to be wherever they are and just look at it as a spectacle out there, that's standing on top of the mizbeach, it's not respectful.
Okay.
So therefore, therefore you have to assume that the mizbeach was only 3 amos tall, and therefore, fine, a kohen standing on it is seen by 5 amos tall, the same. So if the mizbeach is 3 amos tall and the kohen is standing on top of it, fine, he's screened by the yuri.
Well, 3 and 5, but still 3 amos.
A person's not 5 amos tall. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the mizbeach is 3 amos tall. The mizbeach is 3 amos tall. The yuri is a 5 total from the ground. So you have they extend 2 amos above the top of the mizbeach. Okay, and we'll see. The Gemara will point out soon that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, some of the kohen is still visible above the volume, but at least his hands aren't. So at least the avodah itself is done in relative privacy. Okay. Amalei Rabbi Yosi. So Rabbi Yosi says, is that how you're understanding the pasuk? Balik vanema v'etale achosa v'etmasa shara achosa ashala mishkan malam zeach. I can bring you a hesish. Where the pasuk says that you have the curtains of the chaser and the screen that is for the entranceway, Tessa Hashara Chaser, actually, that's for the entranceway of the Chaser, Asher ala Mishkan va'ala Mizbeach, which the Chaser, that's Hashara Chaser means a screen, like if you had, so you have like this, all, not the Kodesh, that's between the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kodesh. What it is like this, you had the Chaser was a rectangle, 100 by 50. Around most of it, you had cloyd. You had poles, and you had curtains made, and you had curtains made, and you had curtains made out of linen that are attached to them and hanging all around. Then at the front, you had a 20 amma area open in front, where there was a mosach, there was a screen made of tchelas vargom and tchelashoni, whatever, hanging in front of it. So this way, when you wanted to go in, you would move the screen aside, or you'd go up in the space between it and the cloyd or whatever, and you'd go into the chassid. Rabbi Yossi says like this. The pasuk describes in Parashat Nasa, it describes the curtains of the chaser and the curtains, meaning the around three sides, around 3.5 sides of the chaser, and the masa, the partition, the veil that separated in front of the door of the chaser, and the pasuk describes them asher alam mishkan ba'alam mizbeach, David, and that were around the mishkan and around the mizbeach, all around. So therefore, the fact that the pasuk puts together the Mishkan and the Mizbeach gives us a hekesh. Ma Mishkan Yud Amis Af Mizbeach Yud Amis. Just like the Mishkan was 10 Amis tall, and there the pasuk explicitly says that, and describes the Mishkan in Parashat Terumah, explicitly says that the Kroshim were 10 Amis tall, so that's the height of a Mishkan building. Af Mizbeach. The Kroshim were the poles, they're not the poles, they're the beams that made up the structure of the Mishkan.
Vertical
beams? Yeah, they're vertical. Af Shishim Oimim, yeah. So there were vertical beams. Each one was 10 amas tall. Therefore, that's the height of the Mishkan building, meaning as opposed to the chaser. So that's clearly 10. Since you have a hekesh between the Mishkan and the Mizbeach, therefore, that teaches us, just like the Mishkan was 10 amas, so the Mizbeach was 10 amas. Rabbi Yehuda, before we get to what Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, the point is, therefore, So that's the hekesh. It has to be, both of them have to be surrounded by cloyim that screen them all. Now you're arguing the cloyim are only 5, but I'll explain to you, says Rabbi Yosi, the cloyim were actually taller than you think they were. Tosfos asks the question, if Rabbi Yosi has a hekesh to say that the mizbeach is 10 amos tall, why does he also need the gzeira shava of Rahua that we were discussing before?
Where did he
need the gzeira shava? Yeah, he used the gzeira shava of Rahua. Remember, he said he learned from the mizbeach ha'pnimi, that just like the mizbeach ha'pnimi is twice as tall as it is wide, so also the mizbeach ha'chitzen is twice as tall as it is wide, so 10 versus 5. So if he has the hekesh, what does he need? What does he need the gzeira shava?
Right.
So a number of achronim talk about this. No, right. So there's a few different answers. One of them that the Shita Mukubetis brings is, after all, you do have a pasuk that says in so many words that the Mizbeach HaChitzen is 3 amos tall, Shalosh amos temasa. That's what Rabbi Yehuda is basing himself on, to say it was exactly 3 amos tall. For Rabbi Yossi to be able to say that, no, that's not what it means, that means only part of the Mizbeach, the whole Mizbeach was 10, He needs both examples. He needs a hekesh to tell us that don't understand the pasuk to at face value to mean three.
He needs a hekesh.
Well, he needs the Zayah Shabbat to tell us how tall it should be. He needs the hekesh to tell us it shouldn't be only three amas tall. Then he needs the Zayah Shabbat to tell us, okay, how tall should it be? 10 amas.
He's saying one was Yudamas, so the other one was Yudamas.
That's the point. The Hekesh teaches us that it's the other way around. If we didn't have the Gzeder Shava, we wouldn't use the Hekesh, as in fact Rabbi Yehuda doesn't use the Hekesh, to contradict the simple meaning of the Pasuk that it was three. So the Hekesh teaches us that it's not, the Hekesh teaches us it has to be light, so because you have the Gzeder Shava from Ravua, which says Ravua, which therefore Rabbi Yossi understands that therefore the height is twice the width, that allows them to say that says now, okay, but now the Hekesh tells us that means we ignore the simple meaning of the pasuk that it was three amos tall and say that means only the fast size of the lamayla. But if we didn't have both of them, then couldn't make it work. And the fact is, we have an explicit pasuk saying otherwise. We would have to use the word ravua according to him for some other jirasha. Mm-hmm. Because we have the zera shava ravua, therefore he's able to use the Hekesh. Because the Zera Shama Ravua teaches us that, as he said before, that you have that the Mizrach HaPnimi is twice as tall as it is wide, and so it must be with Mizrach HaChitzen also, because he used the word Ravua by it also.
That's the
Zera Shama. Then, once he has that, he's able to use the Hekesh over here to teach us to confirm that it means that it's 10 amas tall, right? The other explanation, which that Shitim Lukubetas brings, which is apparently what Rashi seems to be saying also, is the Hekesh isn't really teaching us so much about the height of the Mizbeach. The Hekesh is teaching us rather about the height of the Kloyim. You, Rabbi Yehuda, are asking the Kloyim are only 5 amas tall, so they don't screen off the Mizbeach. I'm going to show you I'm going to show you on the basis of this Hekesh that what it means is the Kloyim are tall enough to conceal both the Mishkan and the Mizbeach. Meaning that when we say 5 amas, it doesn't mean 5 amas total from the bottom, from the ground level till the top of the podium. It actually means 5 amas above the height of the Mizbeach and above the height of the Mishkan. So 15 total in height.
That's how
Rashi apparently learns, and that's true to look about the Taisha's that, and versus Rabbi Nepeiret, who says so explicitly. You know, that's another, otherwise we would think, like Rabbi Hoda says, that it means 5. So Rabbi Yossi is saying, the Hekesh teaches me that the koyim are actually 15 tall.
Five above
the height of the Mishkan and of the Mizbeach, right. The Ma'am Mishkan Yudamas, that's Mizbeach Yudamas. But Omer, and you have another pasuk, Kloyim Chamesh Esrei Amah El HaKosik. You have a pasuk that says that there were Kloyim 15 Amahs by the edges. Now, what it means is, now what does it mean 15 by the... No, because again, he has a source that says that it's 10, but that's not the point. The point is, when the pasuk says Kloyim Chamesh Esrei Amah El HaKosik, it's a positive. But what it means is like this. Again, here's the chatur of the Mishkan. It's closed off with kloyim on three sides. You have 100, you have 100, you have 50, and then in front of you here you have like this. You have 15 on this side, 15 on this side, and the masach 20. That's the chatur of the Mishkan. 100 long, 50 wide. So you have kloyim on the north side of 100, kloyim on the south side of 100, kloyim on the west side 50. On the east side, you have kloyim 15 wide on this side, 15 wide on this side, and then in the middle, between them, you have 20 for the mosque. Right. Now,
100, 15,
and 15 on each side. Now, so Rashi learns that what Rabbi Yossi is saying is, when the pasuk says there were 15 amos by the edges, it doesn't mean the width, it means the height. So therefore, there you have a clear pasuk that says there are 15 short.
The width, what's the width then?
Well, the width would be whatever is needed. Practically speaking, it would also be 15. But, right. But in other words,
the door was 20,
then by elimination, the sides would be 15 each. But the point of stressing that it was 15 would mean that there were 15 tall. That's how Rashi learns in Rabbi Yossi. Tosfos asks them that the fact of the matter is, you see from context of the pasuk, it obviously not five, like Rabbi Yossi said. But Tosfos asks them that the fact is that the context of the pasuk makes it obviously very clear that you're talking about a width of 15 on each side. How is Rabbi Yossi taking that to talk about the height? So Tosfos says no. The proper gusa in the Gemara over here is not oimu kloyim chamesh esrei amah el hakosif, but just kloyim chamesh esrei amah. He's saying you should know that the kloyim are 15 amas tall. You don't have an explicit process for that. What we have is the Hekesh before, that the Kohen has to be 5 amos above the height of the Mishkan and the Mizbeach, which that automatically means 15. And therefore, that comes out that the Kohen was 15 amos. Now, he's not quoting a process to prove his point. But they're 15, and he's saying, I have a Hekesh, and therefore it comes out that they're
15. He derives it from the Hekesh.
He derives it from the Hekesh, right. Not from Kohen, Kamesh, Esther, Amma, as Rashi says, right.
Right. So there's a pasuk that says Kamesh
Esther. That's the thing, there is a pasuk, but Rashi says that Rabbi Yossi apparently would understand it as referring to the height. Tosfos says there's no way Rabbi Yossi could understand it as referring to the height. Therefore, we have to say that Rabbi Yossi is not using that as a proof, he's using the expression, Koyim of 15 Amos, meaning 15 Amos in
height. So the height he derives it from the Hekesh.
The height he derives from the Hekesh, exactly. Okay. So fine. So Rabbi Yossi says, Umah Tamad Loma Hey Amos. So what does the Pasuk then mean when it describes the Kloyim elsewhere as being 5 Amos tall? It means Mitzvah Mizbeach or the Mila. It means above the height of the Mizbeach. Since I hold that the Mizbeach was 10 Amos tall, and so was the Mishkan, the Hekesh taught me that, then that means that the total height of the Kloyim must have been 15. And therefore, Umah Tamad Loma, the Sholosh Amos Kemosei. So what do we do? With the Pasuk of the Mizbeach, 3 Amos tall means, as we said, Mitzvah Sovev Alamayla means from the Sovev upward is 3 Amos, but the total height is 10.
In other words, you had 1 Amos for the Sovev to add for these 3.
And then you had 6 Amos below it, right. Right. Of which that 6 is taken up one Amos with the Mishkan and 5 Amos, then 5 Amos blank. The Mishkan is this net, copper netting. No, it's copper netting that at the bottom edge of it marks the midpoint of the Mizbeach. So it's not really 6, it's not really 6, 1 and 3, then it's 5, 1, 1 and 3. 5 amos there,
yeah,
1
yeah.
Amos, 1 amos netting, 1 amos sober, and 3 amos above that.
Yeah, the real is 6, 1, and 3, because the wall is 6 and the server divides the water from the ground.
Maybe, okay, fine. All right, you want to say it that way, fine, okay. All right. Anyway, so that's, okay. That's the machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, therefore, so we see that Rabbi Yossi holds that the Mizbeach that from Moshe's times was very small, and therefore, it couldn't be that they ran out of room on the big Mizbeach in Shlomo's times. It must be that the Pasuk is telling us why they put away Moshe's Mizbeach instead of continuing to use it, because it's too small, and therefore they declared it fossil. As opposed to, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Mizbeach from Moshe's times was much wider, although lower. Therefore, proportionately, there could have been plenty of room on the big Mizbeach. And if, nevertheless, we see that, then therefore there wasn't proportionately enough room on the big Mizbeach according to Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore, they had to use the floor.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, that's it. I'm just summarizing. Okay. So the question, okay, so what about Rabbi Yehuda? So what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? What does he do? What about the Gzeira Shava? He says it's not 15, he says it's 5.
Exactly.
Right. But the question is, Rabbi Yehuda, he gomu Gzeira Shava, baruch bahut gomer. Rabbi Yehuda says that the Gzeira Shava regarding the word Ravua is referring to the width. Like we said before, that we learned it from the Mizbeach described by Yechezkel. So it's not teaching us about the height, that it was 10. It's teaching us about the width, that it was 10 by 10. Right.
According to those.
What?
You said the context is the width.
No. That was as far as the cloy. That's as far as the cloy. Now we're back to Rabbi Yehuda as far as the width and height of the Mizbeach. That, what does Rabbi Yehuda do with the Gzeira Shava Ravua? He says it's referring to the width and to the length and width of the Mizbeach. That, like Yechezkel describes, you measure from the middle rather than from end to end. So therefore, that's how he gets 10 by 10. Okay, fine. So you have to ask the question, will Rabbi Yehuda hakam chazi koyim? Okay, but of course the fact is, doesn't Rabbi Yossi have a point? If the koyim are only 5 amos tall and the Mizbeach is 3 amos tall, the koyim is going to be visible when he's doing the avodah, because 2 amos, because So it's interesting, actually. You have, we often say that a posted is 3 amos, but you have a machlokas with Shonim, whether that means 3 amos head to toe, or whether it means 3 amos from shoulder to toes, and then you have the fourth amma is, the fourth amma is his head, or part of the fourth amma, anyway, is his head.
So it's 5?
So then, according to that, it would come out that of course
the head is 1.
The head is 1, and the rest of the body is 3, approximately.
So it's 4.
So it's 4, approximately, yeah. So, Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah mentions this in a couple of the Sephardim when he deals with the whole question of how large an Amma is, and it comes out based on that. So we have the two famous shittas of the Chazon Ish and Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah about the question, how large is an Amma? That kind of depends on this whole way of looking at it. If you say that 3 amos means head to toe, You can't possibly say that an amma is out of a wrong kind of a foot and a half, because that would mean the average person is only 4.5 feet tall, and most people, most full-grown adults are taller than that. Then
they were smaller in those
times. They were a little smaller, but not that much smaller. So therefore, you'd have to say, therefore, that an amma is closer to 2 feet, like a chazanish has it. Whereas if you say that the three amas are only from shoulder to, toe, then that fits better with an amma of 18 or 19 inches, like a Rav Chaim Nuss says, because then you come out. That's fine. From shoulder to toe of an average full-grown person is about that, 4.5, 5 feet. And then, And then
much smaller.
Some people may guess were shorter than average for nutrition or whatever.
How many 30 centimeters is the average height in the medieval times?
I don't know, but medieval times, we're talking about times of the month. In medieval times, they were really unhealthy and really malnourished or whatever. That doesn't tell us anything about the times of the Torah or the times of the Gemara or whatever.
Did we ever find skeletons from the time of the
Gemara? I have no idea. I'm sure they did, but were they Jews? Were they Goyim? I don't know. On the plow, once you find skeletons, there's reason to think that they were Jewish skeletons, and you have to bury them anyway. You can't say a bizarre mess to do anything else with them. All right, anyway. Fine. So the point is over here, fine. So regardless, a person is taller than two amas. A person is either three or four amas, depending on how you look at it. So even if one's going to be hooked, the coin is going to stick up above the height of the coin. So if the top of them is back, it's three amas tall, and the coin only five, then you only have two amas of him or screen. What about the rest of them? The answer is, fine. Nehid, the coin is crazy. Fine, you might see the Kohen himself. Avoided the Yadil of the Kazi, at least you wouldn't see whatever it is he's holding in his hand for the Avoida. To that extent, he's screened off for privacy.
What
privacy? Well, because again, it's not for covered dick that the Avoida should be taking place in full view of anybody who just wants to look over and see. You want to come into the Azara and then be like a participant, then fine. You just want to be sitting at home and watching it, like you'd watch a TV show or a sports event or whatever that night. Interesting, in this connection, by the way, Rabbi Ram Chaim Noah brings in footnotes in one of his Torah, where he talks about the Shir Mikvah, that on the face of it, he says, I'm not sure, he says, how this would work out according to the way of looking at it, that three amos is the total height of a person, head to toe. Because then what do you have then? You have that, you're saying you only have, if you have shorter amos, if you say that three amos is only from shoulder to toe, then how does it work over here? You're saying that you only have two amas of him covered and the rest not. That would mean he'd have to keep his hands like no higher than his waist in order for them to be covered. Is he necessarily going to do that, or might he be raising up his hands?
How can he wave the
Well, he's waving things, he's holding them, he's doing that on the ground. We're talking about when he's throwing things into the fire or whatever. That's what he'd be standing on top of the mizbeach. That's what he's standing on top of the mizbeach. But would you have to assume that he's holding them only at about waist height?
No.
So okay, Rabbi Ram Chaim Noah leaves that as a question. The truth is, when I looked at it, he's going based on the assumption over here. We're talking about the total height of the mizbeach is three amos according to the Yehuda. But the fact is that three amos includes the kronos. The coin's not standing on top of the kronos. He's standing on the top surface of the mizbeach, which according to the Yehuda is only two amos from the ground. Therefore, you have another amma to work with. So there's a little more flexibility over there. It seems that a wrong kind no didn't take that into account.
One.
And therefore, that means the rest of the height is two.
Two.
And therefore, if you have two, and then you have a three amma tall person, even if three amma is only to the shoulder, he has plenty of space in front of him to be doing things and still be screened. So it seems like a wrong kind no didn't take that into consideration. I don't know. Unless I misunderstood what he was saying. All right, thanks. All right.
We don't know. Basically.
We don't know that. Okay. Fine. Let's go back to the Gemara. Bishleim alot Yehuda. Okay, I can understand according to Yehuda. Again, going back to the pasuk that we brought from Malachim regarding Shlomo HaMelech, that it says that Shlomo HaMelech sanctified the inside of the chazer. So Bishleim alot Yehuda, I need a stiff kiddush. According to Yehuda's understanding, I can understand why the pasuk says that he sanctified it, because up until that point, the din was you're not allowed to be makhluv on the floor, and now Shlomo and his Beis Din decided that you could.
Because they
ran out of room on the big mizbeach. So that's why you have to use the expression kiddush. Like he made it holy with a kedusha that it didn't have before. El a little Yosi, my kiddush, but
don't do that.
Yeah, we just said it. He's not doing it as a king. He's doing it as a head of the Sanhedrin or whatever, the Gaushian apostle or whatever it is they needed to in order to make this work. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, we understand what kiddush means. But according to Rabbi Yosi, But according to Rabbi Yossi, my kiddush. What do you mean that he sanctified it? It already has. According to him, you can't be makriv on the floor. The azara is already the azara. What is he sanctifying over there? The answer is that's what it means. Lahamid bum is there. It means that he declared the chaser holy in the sense that it's a suitable place to put the mizbeach. We learned in Shavuos, Rashi mentions that that's the point. In other words, that Rashi explains, we learned in Shavuos that we learned in Shavuos that in order to make the Azara have a official kedusha, or if you ever want to extend the Azara or whatever, you have this whole ceremony that you do involving the toides and procession and all. So that they had to do that in order to make the Azara have its official kedusha. So that is the place where the mizbeach can be placed. Otherwise, you can't place the mizbeach there. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yossi, that's what it means. That at that point, they did that ceremony in order to make the Azara have its official kedusha.
So Rabbi Yehuda
would say that no, it means they made the floor holy with a new kedusha that it didn't have before to be able to be matched with karbanis on it. According to Rabbi Yossi, it just means that they were mechadish it to inaugurate the Azara and that it's a suitable place for the mizbeach. Especially remember, according to Rabbi Yossi, the mizbeach that we're building now is much larger than the one of Moshe's time. So therefore, they need to be mekadesh that area over there that now is suitable for building a mizbeach, much larger than the one that we had until now. Instead of 5x5, now all of a sudden we have 20x20. Yeah. Okay. Now one more detail. Bishlam Rav Yossi Heinrich Tiv Cotton. I can understand according to Rav Yossi why the pasuk is describing the mizbeach as small, because it physically was small, Moshe's mizbeach, and therefore they had to replace it with the mizbeach upon him. Ella, what have you heard of? My cousin. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, what do you mean when it says the mizbeach hanachoshes is too small? According to Rabbi Yehuda, who cares if the mizbeach hanachoshes was small? The mizbeach of that Shlomo himself built was also too small. Why mention the mizbeach hanachoshes at all? The answer is, Rabbi Yehuda would understand, it means the stone mizbeach which Shlomo had made to replace the mizbeach hanachoshes, and therefore it's called in the pasuk mizbeach hanachoshes because it's substituted for that one. Even that one, it turned out, couldn't have it. Even that one turned out to be too small, and therefore they have to be mitadish the floor. So according to Rabbi Yossi, mizbeach hanachoshes means exactly what it sounds like. The copper-coated mizbeach of Moshe's time, it was too small, therefore they replaced it with a stone mizbeach. According to Rabbi Yehuda, what the pasuk means is, they had made a stone mizbeach to replace the copper mizbeach. Now, even that stone mizbeach turned out to be too small.
Sounds strange, because, they knew what measurement they would need.
But they didn't, maybe. They didn't know how many korbanos they're going to bring up the chanukah mizbeach. I don't know. Maybe not. I mean, it's not like all the korban shlomo brought. The pastors, many of the people who were there, brought.
How many people were there?
Yeah, but they didn't know in advance. I mean, they didn't know in advance necessarily. I'm sure.
No,
it's not like the whole Jewish people were necessarily there. Okay, but among the people who were invited, you probably had some of them couldn't show up for one reason. You probably had other people who did show up, even though they. It took them years to build the Beis Hamikdash. It's not like they could calculate in advance. It's not like they would necessarily know in advance how many korbanos are going to be brought at the inauguration.
How many years?
7 years it took them building it.
The population didn't increase so much in 7 years.
No, but the number of korbanos they might not have known in advance. So it's just a plan how many korbanos exactly are going to be brought. Anyway, so that's what Rabbi Yehuda understands. They made the mizbeach and it turned out to be too small. We're calling it mizbeach and nechoshes because it replaced the original mizbeach and nechoshes, but it turned out to be too small, and therefore they had to be mekadesh the floor as well. Okay. Then what is my tweet?
What is an area of the floor?
The whole floor, mekadesh. Yeah.
Same time.
I guess so. Okay. But my plea, okay, what is the underlying machloikis between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda? We're saying that the whole machloikis essentially depends on their different understandings of the size of Moshe's mizbeach, because that affects the understanding of the pasuk in Malachi. So if they're arguing where Rabbi Yehuda is saying it was 10x10x3, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying it was 5, Rabbi Yossi rather is saying it was 5x5x10, and each of them is using the Gzeira Shava Ravua. Each of them is using the word Ravua that it says about the Mizbeach HaChitzon, but taking the Gzeira Shava in a different direction. Rabbi Yossi is learning from it the height, and Rabbi Yehuda is learning from it the width. But my plea, what is the underlying machlokas between them, how to learn that Gzeira Shava? So it's like this. Mar Sava Don in Chutz Michutz, Ben Don in Chutz Mifnim. Rabbi Yehuda would say like this. We learn, if we have a choice what to learn a Gzeirah Shavah from, we would rather learn the Gzeirah Shavah from something that's outside the Heichel, from something else that is outside the Heichel. Meaning, we're going to learn the Mizbeach HaChitzen, which is outside the Heichel of the first Beit HaMikdash, and of the Mishkan, for that matter. We're going to learn the Mizbeach of the Mishkan, which is located out of the outside the Mishkan building in the Chatzer. We're going to learn that from Yechezkel's Mizbeach, which is also located outside the Heichel, because it's located in the Chatzer, in the Azorah. That in Dunham,
from the
Chesel, Mizbeach, where it's clear from the description over there that he means it's 12 by 12, means measured from the middle, 24 total. From that, which is a Mizbeach that's located outdoors, we're going to learn from that from the Mizbeach of Moshe, which is also located outdoors. That in Dunham, Chutz Mipnim, we're not going to learn from something outside, we're not going to learn outside from inside. We're not going to learn the Mizbeach, we're not going to learn the Mizbeach of Chitzen from the Mizbeach of Pnimi, which is inside the Heichel. Therefore, he says, I'd rather learn from Yechezkel's Mizbeach. Umar Sova, whereas Rabbi Yossi holds, done kli mikli, getting done kli mibinyan. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi would say, fine, but on the other hand, you would rather learn the Gzeirah Shavah one keli from another keli, because the Mizbeach and the Choshes of Moshe's time and the Mizbeach HaZahav are both kelim, they're both portable. As opposed to, you're getting done in Kli Mibinyan, you shouldn't learn a Kali from something which is a permanent structure. The Mizbeach that Yechezkel described is a permanent structure built into the ground.
So from the Mishkan, you learn to the Pnimi.
So therefore, from the Mishkan, it's better to learn from the Pnimi to the Chitin, from the Mizbeach Pnimi to the Mizbeach Chitin. Therefore, just like the Mizbeach Pnimi is twice as tall as it is wide, so also the Mizbeach Chitin is twice as tall as it is wide. That's the point. But the chitin in Moshe's time was movable. They carried it with the Mishkan. That's what we're saying. Rabbi Yossi is saying, I'm going to learn the size of the one in the Mishkan from the Mizbeach Zahav, which is also in the Mishkan, where they're both portable cases. As opposed to, I'm not going to learn the Mizbeach and the Mishkan from Yechezkel's Mizbeach, which is non-portable. It's a fixed structure. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says, whereas Rabbi Huda is saying that you'd rather learn chutz from chutz. Okay. So that's the underlying method. Omar Rava, so now Rava says, in this connection, now that we established that according to Yehuda, the entire floor has, to a certain extent, the Kedusha of the Mizbeach, so as we said before, Moedir of Yehuda Bedom. Rabbi Yehuda does agree, when it comes to sprinkling blood, that you cannot do that anywhere other than the actual Mizbeach. That you can't do on the floor. That's what we're saying. Rabbi Yossi, of course, would say that. Rabbi Yossi, you can't even be makir on the floor. So for sure, you can't sprinkle blood on the floor. But even Rabbi Yehuda, who says you can be makir, you can burn karbanos on the floor, even he would agree that you cannot sprinkle the blood. Right. That sprinkling blood out of the oven is there. No, because again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Azorah has the kedusha of the Mizbeach. Why shouldn't you be able to sprinkle?
The Bible tells you, doesn't the Pasuk tell you you have to sprinkle it?
Well, but it says Alam Mizbeach, but fine, if the floor has the Kedusha of the Mizbeach. Actually, Tosfos asked a somewhat different question. We know, as we're going to say later on Samachalach, that there are certain details of the structure of the Mizbeach that are essential, and without it, it's fossil. Among them are it has to have chronos, it has to be square, and the floor doesn't have any of those things. So obviously you can't sprinkle blood on it. But, okay, Tosfos leaves that as a question. But, alright. Anyway, the point is, Rava is saying, I can prove from a Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda holds that way, that even though he holds, again, the floor does have a certain part of the Kedusha of the Mizbeach, nevertheless, you can't sprinkle blood on it. Where do we see that? Where do we see? What?
Ron, everybody understands that the sprinkling has to do on the
Mizbeach. That's what we're saying, even Rabbi Yehuda. Even Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, of course, would say that, but we're saying even Rabbi Yehuda would agree. Even Rabbi Yehuda would agree to that. Yeah. Some of it is a Mishnah in Stockholm. The rest of it is a Braisa. That's why it's quoted as the Tanya. All right. Rabbi Yehuda says, after they finished shechting all the Korbanos Pesach on Erev Pesach, after that, they would... We learned this earlier in the Masechta also. Afterwards, a Kohen would fill up one cup with some of the blood that spilled on the floor over there, that's all mixed up from all the different carbonates. The Shofche Agabi Mizbeach, he would pour it onto the Mizbeach, with the reason, She'in Yishofech Domesh Al Achas Mehen. That way, let's say the blood of one of the carbonates Pesach had gotten spilled and hadn't been poured or sprinkled on the Mizbeach like it was supposed to. This way, Nimtazem Achshiri, this way it accomplishes that you master that carbon. So we learned earlier in the Sefer that we discussed the Chachamim disagree with him because they say you have Dam HaChamtzis mixed in there, and one kind of Dam can be Mevatel another, where the Yehuda holds in Dam Mevatel Dam. But we discussed all of that, but the point is, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, what do you need in order to make that hypothetical korban kosher? You need to actually sprinkle the blood on the mezbeach. The Isak said, "Sovereign Rabbi Yehuda, kol azara mikadcha." If you were going to tell me Rabbi Yehuda holds the entire azara has the full fledged kedusha of the mezbeach, hori sati dolem mitzvotin. And what's the problem? The mitzvah has already been accomplished. The blood got onto the floor, which is functionally the equivalent of the mezbeach. Why do you need to pick up a cup of it and sprinkle it on the mezbeach? Obviously, therefore, Rabbi says there is the proof that Rabbi Yehuda says that as far as sprinkling, you have to do it on the actual mezbeach. Okay, I'm going to ask why. Why? Who says? Maybe Rabbi Yehuda is saying the reason why you have to do that is fine. It's fine if blood is sprinkled on the floor, but as long as it was done with koyach adam. But in other words, if you had, now we discussed earlier in the Masechta, we said even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that if the blood came directly out of the neck and landed on the floor, it would be possible. There's nothing you can do about that. Rabbi Yehuda just said that the koyach was risen, and therefore they make sure that doesn't happen. But on the other hand, because they're passing the bowls quickly back and forth to each other, therefore they can end up dropping it and spilling it. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Yehuda would agree, we could say, that the spilling of the blood does have to be with koyach adam. It can't just be that accidentally you dropped it. It has to be that you deliberately intended to spill it. Therefore, he would say, if you deliberately spilled it on the floor, then fine. You could say, but only because you accidentally spilled it on the floor would be no good. Therefore, you have to pick up a cup of it and deliberately spill it in order to be used to that. Incidentally, not necessarily. What do you say? It has to go on the mezbeach. It could be just as well that it goes on the floor. But the problem here is not that it went on the floor, but the problem is that it wasn't koyach adam. Incidentally, there's a discussion back and forth on this. According to that, hypothetically, it sounds like it could work, maybe, according to Rabbi Yehuda. We don't know, but in other words, we don't have a solid proof that Rabbi Yehuda says otherwise. Okay, the Gemara says...
What about the
by a Korban Pesach, and you don't have that. By a Korban Pesach, you have shvicho, zrika achas, kenegad ha'yisod. You have one pouring or one sprinkling above the yisod.
But by the other Korbanos...
Never mind the other Korbanos. You were talking about the Korban Pesach. Besides, even with the other korbanos, we said b'di'evet, all you need is one sprinkling and you're yosef.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
How do we know we're talking about the korban pesach?
Because that's the context over here that Rabbi Yehuda is saying on erev Pesach, at the end of the day, a kohen would collect one cup full of blood from all the blood that's on the floor over there and then pour it on the mezbeach in order to be master any hypothetical korban that might have had its blood spilled. Okay, but if we assume that Rabbi Yehuda's problem is not that it was on the floor, but that it wasn't koyach adam, then you don't have a proof. By the way, this gave rise to an interesting discussion between Reb Chaim Oizer and the Chazan Ish, back and forth on the question. We learned earlier in the Masechta that when it comes to shechting kodshim, misafik is possible. If you just shecht it without having in mind that you're shechting, you didn't realize what you're doing or whatever, then the korban is possible. Does that apply to other avodas as well? So the Chazan Ish argued on the basis of this Gemara, it seems like, yeah. Like, for example, sprinkling the blood if you were to accidentally spill it. So it seems from our Gemara that maybe, yeah, Misafik would be possible. On the other hand, Rabbi Chaim Oizer argues on the contrary. The fact that our Gemara over here is not mentioned in the context of Misafik, the fact that it mentions Koyach Adam, implies the problem is that it was completely an accident, that there wasn't even an intention to spill. But if, for example, he had an intention to spill, just he didn't know that it was blood of Kodshim or something, or he didn't know that he's accomplishing a mitzvah by it, maybe it would be Kodshim. Discussion back and forth with me. Okay. Anyway. Okay, the Gemara says in pain, fine, but if you're going to understand Rabbi Yehuda that way, if you're going to understand Rabbi Yehuda that way, that maybe he would allow the sprinkling to be done on the floor as long as it's done with intent, fine, then why do you need to take it over to the mezbeach? Nishkele v'nishbichle abduchte. Then why not, fine, why doesn't Rabbi Yehuda say, pick up a cup of the blood and then pour it right there, back there on the floor? Why walk over to it to the mezbeach? Okay. The fact that he's saying take it over to the mezbeach seems to prove Rava's original point that Rabbi Yehuda agrees sprinkling has to be done on the mezbeach. Okay, the Gemara says not nishkele, let him take it, nishbichle adjuchte, and let him pour it right back there onto the floor where he was. Why do it onto the mezbeach?
Rabbi Yehuda said it has to.
He said that he takes a cup of it and pours it on the mezbeach. The answer is, okay, the Dilma Mishum debate in this one, okay, you could say not necessarily. The reason why Rabbi Hoda says to put it on the Mizbeach is because even Rabbi Hoda says the ideal thing is to put it on the Mizbeach. But the Yevon, maybe he would accept it on the floor. So we don't have a proof, we don't have a solid proof from that bright, one way or the other, that Rabbi Hoda would say that sprinkling on the floor is possible. Maybe, like Robert is saying, but not necessarily. So we'll stop over here because then there's the next thing. No, so I won't be here tomorrow.
So who's going to take over?
So we will have that Shem Shlomi Newborn should be taking over. Okay, so we have a couple of minutes if you want a little talk about the Yerovam situation.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. Okay. You have like this. Shlomo had allowed his wife to worship Avodah Zarah. Therefore, Navi comes, Achiyah Shiloni comes and says, no, some of them, whatever, he had 300 wives and some of them concubines or whatever. Some of them, anyway, whatever, he allowed, they were worshipping Avodah Zarah, and he didn't protest. In fact, the Pasuk makes it sound as though he himself worshipped Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in Shabbos tells him that he didn't, that it's just he allowed them to and he didn't prevent them. Okay, anyway, whatever it is, the point is, because of that, Hashem sent a Navi, Achiyah Shiloni, to say what's going to happen is the kingdom is going to get split up. It won't happen during Shlomo's time. However, in the times of Shlomo's son, his son, Rehavam, his successor, will be left with one shevet. Actually, two Yehuda and Binyamin, to that extent, are considered like one shevet. And the rest of the Shvatim are going to form a kingdom of their own.
Which
is the kingdom of Yisrael, we call it the kingdom of the ten Shvatim. So when Achiyah Shiloni goes to Yerovam and tells him he's going to be the king. Okay, so what happens? So sure enough, after Shlomo passes away, to make a long story short, the people, most of the people rebelled against Rehavam. They asked him to lower their taxes or whatever, and he refused to, so therefore 10 of the Shvatim decided we don't need Rehavam, we don't need Malchus Beis David, we don't need nothing, let's go form a kingdom of their own. They did. I mean, it was Minashamayim, but that was the best that they decided at the time. You have a medrash that says that the Jewish people were, what is it, the Jewish people rejected three things. They rejected Malchus Beis David, they rejected the Beit Mikdash, as we'll see, and they rejected Hashem. Because when they started worshipping the exiles of, when is the Geula going to come?
I mean, if they reject Malchus Beis David, and they reject they could have
taken the view that they're still worshipping Hashem just in other places, which okay, it's illegal off the halacha, but whatever. The point is, the Medrash says, what's going to bring the Geula when the Jewish people reaccept all those three things? We say every month we say in Kiddush Levana, Uvikshuras Hashem Alekayim Bez David Malcham, that they'll the Jewish people will eventually return and seek out their king David, Malchus Beis David, and Hashem, and there's a different pasuk that says also that they'll want back the Beit Mikdash also, and that when the Jewish people really truly want those things, that's when the Geula will come. Anyway.
So that's assuming right now that they don't.
Well, I mean, there's
one of those things that they
don't. I don't know. I mean, there's different levels of wanting, right? I mean, we can say we want Mashiach now, but how deeply do we really feel it? All right, whatever, that's another matter. Anyway, the point is, getting back to the story of Yerovam.
When it's about Mashiach, it's about Malchus Beis David.
Malchus Beis David, yeah. Yeah, but at the time, it was Rehavam. Eventually, the Malchus Beis David is Mashiach. Anyway, Yerovam, once he's king, starts thinking to himself as follows.
So Yerovam was,
he was from Shevet Ephraim. He actually had a certain schus over there, because at one point Shlomo had closed up a large breach in the wall of Yerushalayim that people used to come through to the Ohel Regel, and then Yerovam approved of that. We learned about that in Sanhedrin. Anyway, so Yerovam becomes a new king. He starts thinking to himself as follows. What's going to happen next Yom Tov? The Jewish people from my kingdom are going to go to Yerushalayim. They're going to be in the Beit Mikdash. They're going to see Rehavam sitting over there because he's the king of Malchus Beis David and he's allowed to sit in Yazara. I'm not because I'm not from Malchus Beis David. Therefore, he was from Ephraim. Therefore, people are going to say, who needs Yerovam? Let's go back to Rehavam. But therefore, to prevent that, Yerovam figured, okay, well, then what I need to do is I need to wean them away from Yerushalayim and establish a different place for them to daven to Hashem and to bring korbanos and to serve Hashem. So he set up his two Eglei Azov in Beis Elam and Dan. He set up guards on the road to prevent people from going to Yerushalayim. And he announced, from now on, these are the places to worship. Eilei Alatecha Yisrael Asher HaLocham Ezechayim. Go worship in Beis Elam and Dan instead of in Yerushalayim. So again, like I was saying before, you had people who sneak through the lines, you had people who befoul let that.
This was
36 years after the Beit Mikdash was built. So that's what it was. And the first Beit Mikdash, okay. So, So yeah, remain that way throughout the whole Malchus of Israel. All but one of the kings afterwards are described as they ran in the ways of Yerubbaal, meaning they continue with the Egel Azov. You have one king towards the end, Shalom, who that statement is not said about him, by Yasser Abayin Hashem. The Malbim, in fact, learns that he tried to get rid of the Egel Azov, but the other people didn't go for it, and therefore they ended up assassinating him. So finally, the last king, Hoshea ben Ela, took away the guards. That's one of the things we celebrate on Tu B'Av, is the fact that they took away the guards and announced, now anybody who wants to go to Yerushalayim, go ahead and go to Yerushalayim. In the end, the people didn't, because by that time, for over 200 years, they were used to going to the Egel Azov, so they didn't, and that was actually the last straw that sealed their fate and brought about the goal of Aseret HaShavatim, that Hashem said, look, until now you were,
they didn't want to
go to Yerushalayim, where now they even have the choice. So, yeah.
And was he rewarded for that king?
I don't know if he was rewarded.
Hoshea
ben Ela was his name. I don't know specifically what his reward was. He wasn't. Actually, I don't know what Shea he was from. But whatever, he was from one of the Aseret HaShavatim. No, the different kings of Malchus Yisrael came from different Shavatim. There were a number of different dynasties over there. But anyway, so that's what he did. Whether he was rewarded for it, I don't know. But actually, there's a Gemara in Gittin that says that on the contrary, you know, because now he made that now, like, the onus is not only on him as a king because he's preventing the people. Now the onus is on the whole people. That's what triggered the Golus finally. That they.
So he was punished.
So well, he together with the rest of the people. In other words, the point is he should have not only taken away the guards, he should have also demanded that everybody force them to go to Yerushalayim, and instead he just said, I'll take away the guards, you can do whatever you want, and that's not the right thing for a king to do. But yeah. Nevertheless, though, we do celebrate on, that's one of the things we celebrate on Tu B'Av, is that he took away those guards, and people are now freely able to go to Yerushalayim. Yeah. That's the history of it in a nutshell. Worth mentioning, by the way, worth mentioning an interesting idea. So how Bechlal, I mean, we learned from Sanhedrin, actually, how Yudovah manipulated things to get Achiyah Shiloni to sign off on, to give him a blank check on this, and later kings of Israel, in fact, made the mistake of thinking, of not realizing that Achiyah Shiloni had been duped into it. But anyway, there's also, because he's a Navi, but unless he's giving Nebuah on something, then he's a Talmud Chacham. So a Talmud Chacham can be lured into making a mistake. He thought that Yerubbaal was a good guy, and he didn't realize, whatever, we learned from Sanhedrin about that. But there is also an interesting idea that I once saw, I think it's in Daf Sofer, and I think he brings from Rav Nachman Breslover, that says, now look, how did Yerubbaal convince the whole people to abandon Yerushalayim and start going to his exile? Obviously, he had to write books and pamphlets and whatever, proving his point, to claim that it was the right thing to do. So sort of Nachman, I think it is, says an idea that's a bracha for us, that not a single page of any of those writings of Yerubbaal has survived, because nowadays a person would read even one page of those would make them instant apocryphal.
Because they were lost, they're not
printing presses in those times, or whatever. The point is, he was so convincing, right, after all, the Gemara tells us that Hedrin, he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, he was able to be so convincing in his arguments in favor of the Egel Azov and against Yerushalayim, that nowadays, a person would read even one page of those, he'd become an instant apocryphal. So a bracha from the Eidishter that none of those writings.
How did such a big Talmud Chacham become such a big apocryphal?
Well, for one thing,
there has to be a connection.
Well, the connection is because a person can be a Talmud Chacham and not be a Yorei Shamayim. Now, a person can be a Talmud Chacham,
and in particular,
he can be a Baal Gaiva. The whole problem developed, actually, first of all, it developed from Gaiva, the fact that he's saying, I don't want that the Chavim should be sitting and I'm standing. But it also developed, some Baalim Musa talk about it, also stems from a lack of Bitochen in Hashem. He'd been told by Achiyah Shiloni that he's going to be king. He should have had Bitochen that the Edison knows what he's doing. If he said, I'm going to be a king, and nevertheless, he also said that I can't sit in the Azara and Rechavim camp, obviously Hashem will arrange things that I'll still be able to be king and not have the people overthrow me in favor of Rechavim. The fact that he had that lack of Bitochen, like, okay, Hashem made me king, but now Hashem may not know what he's doing. I have to take my own steps there. That was the beginning of it.
Gaiva
and a lack of Bitochen. Only a Melachim based up is allowed to sit in the Azara. Yeah.
But he went to Yerushalayim?
No, that's the thing. He figured the next time that people go to Yerushalayim, if I go along with them, because I also have a mitzvah of Aliyah that I go, then people are going to see whatever. Yeah. That's what it is. So a lack of bitachon and a lack of bittul today. Yeah.
You told me the other day when we were speaking about Rabbi Yosselman that there was a tradition that he was as expensive as regular?
As Rashi. Well, Rashi in German, I think, is the origin. I don't remember. I might be wrong about that, but maybe not. I don't know. I'd have to look it up. I don't remember.